Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
All right, we are back with another episode of the Startup Hustle podcast, which you're probably wondering who this is today taking over Startup Hustle podcast. I am Melissa Vincent. I am the executive director of Pipeline Entrepreneurs, and we are a fellowship for high growth entrepreneurs who happen to call the Midwest home. And we are taking over the Startup Hustle podcast this week. And I'm joined today with one of our Pipeline members and really phenomenal entrepreneur, Leandro Castro. Hi, Leandro. How are you?
Good. Hi, Melissa. How are you?
Good.
Thanks for having me here.
Yeah. Thanks so much for joining us. I was so excited to get to talk to you today. We've got a lot, obviously, to chat about. But I know that one of the things that you have in common with every other member of Pipeline Entrepreneurs is that you are a serial entrepreneur. And this current company that you have, Logica, where you are the chief product development officer, is not your first startup, not your first rodeo, is it?
No.
Tell us about your entrepreneurial journey, and then I'm excited to hear more about Logica.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, this is not my first startup. I actually had another company before this. It was a company called Multimechanics. It was like a 9-year journey. I was a member of Pipeline throughout most of that journey. Started that as a project out of grad school and turned the research into a product, gained customers across the globe, raised venture capital from some large VC funds in the East and West Coast, and eventually, ultimately, ended up getting acquired by one of the largest players in our space, which was Siemens. And it was a very nice journey. Learned a lot, gained a lot from that. Super grateful for the outcome. And once I was, off the hook and didn't have any commitments to the company anymore, it didn't take too long to get kind of bored of, doing nothing and finding something else to do. And decided to jump right back in. And the problem we're solving now is actually very close to us. I've experienced that firsthand. We're doing like a financial modeling software. So we're basically improving the way that people do financial modeling, which is traditionally done in Excel. And we came up with a much better way to do this that is much more collaborative. It's much faster to do and very, very flexible too. And it has been a very exciting journey. We've been a little over a year in this journey now.
Well, and as a actual, not only are we part of your journey, we're actually a client in this journey. We're part of it as Pipeline, as the resource that we are to Logica, but we're also a client. So I can actually attest to how great the actual platform that you built is, and you're actually building this company with your wife as your co-founder. So tell us about that. She's also one of our 2021 class of fellows and a really phenomenal entrepreneur herself. But what is that like working with your spouse as a business partner?
Yeah, absolutely. We actually had the privilege to work together in the previous company too for several years. So when we decided to start this new company, we knew what we were getting ourselves into. And obviously, we've been married for 13 years now. So it's actually, I think we call this like our superpower, because we have basically unlimited access to each other, even throughout this whole pandemic when most people are remote and isolated. So we could evolve on things very quickly. We're very aligned in our core values, and that helps with decision making. I feel like we move at a light speed, basically. And and also, like, we work really hard, and we have, even odd hours and things like that. So it's being in the same place, it helps, especially in days like today where, everything happens remotely. So,
yes. Well, and I'm sure too that not every entrepreneur has the luxury of being able to have a spouse or a partner that understands what it's like to be an entrepreneur. I hear that frequently from our members who have non-entrepreneurial partners and spouses, and that's difficult because they don't always understand the long hours, the level of stress when everything is sitting on your shoulders. So to have a co-founder who's also your spouse, I am sure that you guys get a lot done, and what you've been able to accomplish in a year so far is a testament to that, I'm sure. So one of the things that you've accomplished this year, obviously, Carissa getting into Pipeline and you also being part of Pipeline, you're now like not just Pipeline family, but you're like double in the Pipeline family. But you also got into Y Combinator, which is not an easy thing to get into. So tell us about that process for those listening who have the dream of getting into Y Combinator or Pipeline. Tell us a little bit about your experience with both, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, both things were dreams, and it's quite crazy that they became reality. I remember the first time I started with Pipeline, the first time I got connected to some of the Pipeline members back in 2012. And, that was actually the first time I heard the term serial entrepreneur. You know, people that I've, met folks have done it quite a few times and have been successful. And that felt very attractive to me. And that's something that I think I placed as a goal as well. And I wanted to be, close to people that have done that before and kind of, could learn from them. And that's, I remember the first time I went to a Pipeline event, that's when it clicked with me. Not only that kind of journey and the type of people that are involved, but also like finally being in a place that I felt like those are like my people. I can't get enough of this, and I, could be talking to those folks like pretty much forever. And so that's kind of like, and at that time I decided to apply to Pipeline. It was back in 2012, but actually I did not get into Pipeline the first time I applied. But I've got a lot of really good feedback, and I took the feedback, and acted on it. Our business grew quite a lot in that, year between my two applications. And then the second time I applied, I was able to join the class of 2013. And
lucky
I remember
13.
The moment. Yeah. Yeah. And the moment I got that call was very surreal too. I remember that clearly, where I was and everything. So, then after that, there's 6 years more with my first company. And now in this new company here, Chris, I got the chance to join Pipeline too, which that's super surreal for us. And it's really fun too, because then we, when things open up, we will get to go to events together and all of that. But then the YC experience was a similar experience too. Was also a dream. Actually, the funny part is that I remember reading an essay from Paul Graham about entrepreneurship right before I first started my first company. And at the time, I didn't know who Paul Graham was or YC or anything, but the essay definitely struck a chord in me. And I remember that. And then later I connected the dots that there was actually a Paul Graham essay. And going through the whole, you know, so that was always kind of like a dream too. And we're able to accomplish that. But that was actually very similar too. We actually applied right when we started the company, and it was really early on, and we didn't get in, right? Yeah. But one of our core values, it's grit, right? We don't give up very easily. So we try it again the next time, just like I did with Pipeline. And I think a very similar type of approach. I think at the end of the day, they saw the growth and how much we're able to evolve, you know, in between applications. And there's a lot of people that can say they can do things, and then you go there and you do it, and, you know, that puts you ahead of the game. So,
well, and so one, I think that, you know, for those people who are listening, the serial entrepreneurial experience is very different. And so kind of just speak to that a little bit as far as why serial entrepreneurs are so incredibly valuable. So Pipeline plays this unique role where our goal is, as a fellowship, to help entrepreneurs, really high growth entrepreneurs in particular, scale and get to the next level. But there's a reason why we look specifically for serial entrepreneurs, and that is because what typically happens when you focus on serial entrepreneurs is exactly what happened with you. So you go through a company, you exit, you come right back in and you start another company. If you go through a company and it fails, you get right back up, you start another company. And when you look at the impact that someone like yourself has in successfully selling a company and then staying in the region, starting another company, reinvesting in both other entrepreneurs, mentorship, all of those pieces, the impact that has regionally is just extraordinary. And so we absolutely love focusing on serial entrepreneurs because of the impact that they can have. So tell us something that, while you were working on your exit from Multi Mechanics, what's something that you learned that you want to make sure you apply with Logica?
Well, there's been so many things. I think I'll try to highlight one, but the interesting thing is that the neat thing about serial entrepreneurship is because you get to carry a lot of the lessons that you've gained, and it's quite a lot, and you got the chance to play the game again. Even if you play the game once and you won, there's so many mistakes that you do along the way that you, if you get the chance to do it again, you commit new mistakes, but not the
you not know, the same ones.
Not the same ones. Yeah. Yes. And I would say, like, one of the things that I definitely learned in the first one is how long does it take to actually, you know, get your product market fit, and how important it is to get product market fit. And you cannot try to bypass that one way or the other. You have to pay that price at some point. So, and you know, product development cycles can get very long, and it's a very crucial point to get to. And I would say one of the lessons is to early on, as soon as possible, figure that part out. Even before, you know, try to scale too soon.
Yes. And that is probably why our very first module for our fellows in Pipeline focuses on finding your target customer and understanding what they need so you can actually meet that need. So that is really, really good advice. And then what are some things that as you built out Logica, you've already learned in the either the product market fit or just where you want to go?
Well, one thing I've learned is that starting a company is very much like having a kid. It's always hard. Even the second time, you might learn a lot of things and you might feel confident and all of that. And you get your, yeah. But at the end of the day, it's still really hard. There's a lot of work. It's less hard, but it's still not easy. So that's part of the path here. I'm actually quite amazed with when we, you know, we've been here in the Midwest this whole time, and there's a lot of very let's say solid Midwest advice we get about profitability and things like that. And we're quite amazed by, you know, after going through the whole YC experience, that was the first time that we're, you know, in the West Coast and with like, those kinds of connections. And we're quite amazed of how consistent the advice was to an extent, how like, you know, you should not focus on vanity metrics and you should be, you know, very focused on your, you know, bottom line and your, you know, customers and revenue and, you know, product market fit, things like that. It's much less glamorous than one might think. And it's much less like, you know, it's less about PRs and tech crunch and things like that. And it's more about, you know, the real work, you know?
Yes, absolutely. One of the things that I'm also curious about, because I think it's something that a lot of people who have a startup are trying to figure out. So when you looked at what was currently in the market, and as you mentioned, Excel is something that a lot of people use for their financial modeling. What was that piece that you said, oh, I know we could do this better? Was it just to make it more of an easy, was it to make it easier, faster, all the above? And why did you say, you know what, I think that we need to be the ones to solve this problem?
So we experienced the problem, you know, firsthand. And not only us, you know, by talking to a lot of companies in our network, especially pipeline companies that, you know, eventually became customers too. The pain that we were feeling wasn't limited to ourselves, and Carissa herself experienced that in other, you know, previous roles she had to. Initially, the pain was really as a user. Like, I wish there was something out there that we didn't have to spend so many hours trying to redo scenarios and redo the modeling over and over and over again. I feel like, you know, Excel followed my journey all the way from the beginning through, you know, 9 years and all the way through the end. I could never get rid of it. You know, it's always part of the job, one way or the other, you know. and don't get me wrong, I do like Excel. I learned how to use it, you know, over time, and I have no issues with it, other than the fact that it takes a lot of time to maintain and update those things. So it's just very cumbersome, and I felt like we would spend 80% of your time just doing busy work to assemble those financials and things like that, and then about 20% of the time with the real value-added work, which is, okay, look at the numbers, now make a good decision out of that. Mm. So we want to flip that and let people spend much less time doing setup and modeling and things like that, and more time thinking about their business and the direction they want to take. And one of the things that it's interesting about, you know, the journey, you know, early on when we decided to take on this, I think we had a unique take on how this could be better. That we are proposing like to an extent, a fundamental change, even though it's masked in a more normal interface to an extent. But there's a fundamental change there, and we see why, and we saw that what we had to bring into the market, the reason why everyone kept going back to Excel is because Excel is super flexible, and we knew we had to keep that. So it's like, how can you keep the flexibility but enhance the performance, the, you know, the productivity and things like that? That was the unique insight. But I would say like one of the cool things about the journey is that as we start to do, you know, market research and that, and start to talk to other companies to see how they do things, and, you know, flexibility was a very important thing. But one of the things that was very obvious too is that the pain was so high that people were willing to share their financials, you know, with us, so that we could help them, right? So like the financials are things that, you know, companies keep very confidential, of course, and it's, you know, and, you know, the fact that we could do market research and people were willing to, they had such a high level of pain that, you know, someone approaching them to try to solve the problem, they would be willing to, you know, do that. That showed to us that there was a huge issue, a huge problem. You know, in terms of market size too, it's a huge market. In fact, you know, spreadsheets have been around for so long. It's been like, you know, probably like 40 years, you know, prior to Excel. And that was actually the single application that pretty much created the whole personal computer market, right? And so the big advantage is a really large market. The challenge here is we're not the first ones that tried to solve this problem. And there's been several companies that have tried before, some that succeeded in some sectors, and then it was still had some huge outcomes even, you know, within that. But it's still like a largely an open problem, at least for the middle market and small companies. And that's what we are trying to solve. And we have very privileged to, with the experience that we had, the resources, the network, and the perspective that we could have a good shot at solving. So,
yeah. So you're focusing on the small to mid-sized market, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And so, because I've actually seen your product in action, I, from my experience, would say that, you know, so Excel is just, I mean, obviously it is very flexible, and that's awesome. But I almost feel like your tool is, it's like a visualization tool meets Excel. So you're able to visually see things without necessarily having to, once, you know, those underlying formulas are set up, you're really able to almost like drag and drop and move things around. So it's very visual, which I think for someone who is trying to run a startup or a small to mid-sized company, being able to visualize your financials is incredibly valuable, because it's easier to see and make the right decisions when you can see it versus just a bunch of numbers and, you know, okay, like, what does that look like over time? How do those projections go? And you're able to very easily tweak things and just in a glance see, okay, well, if we make this change in pricing or whatever, how does that actually change long term? And your tool makes that so easy to accomplish. That's really phenomenal. So I love the product, but even more than that, I know that, you know, you guys have a long-term vision for where you want to see that go. And so right now you're focusing on small and mid-sized businesses. At some point, do you plan to go for larger companies, or is this really just like, this is your bread and butter and this is where you kind of plan to stay and just keep working on that?
The longer term strategy is to go up market, and we think we have the fundamentals to go there. The platform is very generic and very easy to customize from a user perspective. And we've been actually quite surprised with how much larger customers we've been getting, and the complexity there, and how much the tool can handle even in this, you know, early as we are in the journey. So we definitely see the potential to go there, and that's one of the goals. So we're kind of marching, you know, from the middle to the top.
Awesome. And I would be remiss if I did not take a moment to say that today's episode is brought by Pipeline Entrepreneurs, and that we have a fellowship for high growth entrepreneurs, happen to call the Midwest home. If you are in Nebraska, like Leandro, or Kansas or Missouri, you are welcome to apply for our fellowship program starting this September. And this September, we're actually kicking off a second class of entrepreneurial programming for underserved entrepreneurs who are female, minority, or rural entrepreneurs. So it is basically pre-pipeline programming. So if you are curious about what that might be, and if you want to apply, feel free to go to pipelineentrepreneurs.com. And a huge thank you to Startup Hustle for letting us take over this week. We're super excited to be here and talking to our members. So Leandro, back to you and life after acquisition. So when you were originally working with Multi Mechanics, how many, was it you and a co-founder? And then how large did you scale before you got to the acquisition piece of the company?
Yeah, at some point pre-acquisition, we had about 15 people, and we raised about $3.5 million total.
And did you feel like, and even as that pertains to Logica, I think one of the concerns about being an entrepreneur in the Midwest is you could probably do a seed round, definitely can find some angel capital, but when you're going to a Series A, Series B, it's hard to find the right funding that will allow you to stay regionally and not have to move to the coast. Did you find that at all, or what's your take on that?
Yeah, absolutely. It was definitely hard to fundraise in the Midwest. I think it was particularly harder even for us. We had a deep tech solution that was very hard to understand. There's a lot of nuance to it. So ultimately, we end up raising capital from some large funds. Invest Nebraska was the only local investor that came along. But they're extremely supportive of the whole ecosystem. So and in fact, we should have them as investors in this new company as well. But, you know, we had to really go outside to find the right, partners. We found one of the investors was a corporate VC that was actually one of our main customers. They obviously saw enough value in the product and what the solution was, bringing to them, that they want to, help scale that and further expand the reach of the product. And we also got a fairly large industrial focused VC with offices in the East and West Coast. And those two partners were very important too. They definitely brought a different perspective to the game. It wasn't just all about capital. They also helped us. One of the firms had a whole back office that provided a lot of services from, the finance side, HR, marketing, even some legal, and we're able to operate as a world-class company, even though we the core team was much smaller, but there was a huge back office behind that, handling a lot of the, groundwork. And on the other side, the other VC brought a lot of, industrial connections, being a corporate VC and customer introductions and things like that. So those are really good partners, but we had to go outside to get it. I don't know if we talked to everyone locally, but we talked to a lot of people locally, and it's really hard to raise. So.
And how did you get connected to those other firms? Because I think that's the other piece, right? Is network. So One, it's trying, you want to stay regional and you're trying to invest, find local investors. So one, how did you get to those investors that were outside the area? But then two, was it an issue at all for you to be able to say, hey, we want to stay here? Was there a request for you to have to move, or were they, obviously they were open and willing to let you stay because you're still in Nebraska, but what was that like?
Yeah, there was definitely a certain level of skepticism regarding the region and whether or not we could, build a team here and all this. I think out of the gate, I won't take credit for that. It was actually Chris's idea, but we went out and we did some recruiting at the MIT Career Fair. We had a few spots open. We got like over 100 applicants, top-notch people. We managed to get our picks to move to Nebraska, from Boston. And I think that was a huge boost of confidence that even though we are here, we're working on something so interesting that people are willing to move to, come and work here. And I think that diminished a lot of the concerns overall. And I think that was, but the bottom line, I think, is that, right, like, isn't about words. You have to go out there and do it and show. And it's the same thing with the whole fundraising. So people tell you no. It's really easy to say no. So you just got to go and talk to other folks. What we did is we realized we had to be profitable early on because we're, a bootstrapped company and at first. And, so we had to focus on, customers and things like that. And that was actually, one of the investors was a customer at the end. So it's kind of like if you do what you have to do, which is try to solve a real problem and bring a solution to that problem. And, eventually I think things work out. You just should not expect anything to happen overnight. It takes a lot of time to build the relationships, to build the, to really show that you should get the funding.
Well, and for those companies, another question I know that you probably, just like I do, hear from a lot of entrepreneurs is, should I bootstrap for as long as possible? When should I raise capital? Giving up equity and all of that. What's your advice when someone comes to you and they're currently bootstrapping and they're considering, do I look for capital and how much control do I have to give up? And all of those kind of questions that I'm sure you get all the time.
Yeah, I've done both bootstrapping and then fundraised and then, invest my own money and then fundraised again. And, so I've seen all the you know, the different sides of it. I'd hate to give generic advice because it really depends on the company and the person and their own, you know, context. And I would say what you should, first of all, I mean, that is a more fundamental question or whether or not you want to try to follow the venture route, because it's like a sport to an extent, and you have to be able to play the game and be willing to play the game, which is a really hard game to play. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot of work and all of this. It's not the only way to make a company successful. There's, you know, examples of companies that manage to grow quite a lot, even when they're just bootstrapping. They're more of the exception. The reality is, like, it does take a lot of capital to when you want to boost sales and marketing, especially if you want to do it fast. But that said, though, you should not bypass product market fit. I think, you know, it's really important to get that phase before you try to deploy too much capital early on, because you might be burning a lot of money just to learn lessons that you could learn in a much more efficient way. And by the time that you learn your lesson, you know, if you go too far into that route, you might have lost control. And then at that point, you're not quite a founder anymore. You're more like an employee. So there's a lot of, you know, crazy stories of things like that happen. And so that's the only cautionary tale.
Yes. And kind of to segue into that is another topic I wanted to talk about, which is I think we frequently see, you know, whether entrepreneurs who start their company, they have people who are working for them for practically free, they start giving out equity, and then they are trying to bring in, and they have a horrible cap table of all kinds of different situations. And honestly, some of our best members have struggled with, you know, not having their cap table be very, inviting to additional capital, if you will. So did you ever struggle with that when you were first starting out? And did you look to say, well, okay, you know, we can't really pay employees a ton, so let's give them equity? And then what's advice you would give to someone as they're starting out, and when you first start and you're like, I have all this equity to give, but at some point you're going to need it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I looked at it in a very objective way. There's actually ways to do, you know, roughly the math of, you know, how much, you know, in theory, if you're to raise more money, you know, when you're trying to get people on board, assuming they want to join the company and they're excited about it and they're able to, you know, take some sort of pay cut, you know, you should think of them as investors, right? If someone is taking like a 50K pay cut, you know, you have two options. You could go out and try to raise 50K, and how much of that costs you in terms of equity, or you could, you know, get the investor, the employee to basically, you know, invest pretty much like as a sweat equity. There's some nuance to there, of course, in terms of, you know, the legal side and all of that, but objectively speaking, that's, you know, that's a math exercise, that you do. So it's, one, do you have the option, right? Do you have the choice? Can you use, you know, capital from investors, or you don't have that choice? And if you do, what would you prefer to do? Right. And, it really depends to an extent, to, you know, poor the people and things like that. I would say, one thing that one of the dangers of bootstrapping and is that you can go cheap on some things, and I don't necessarily mean talent. I actually mean like it could be a talent, but I mean, you know, on the, you know, legal side, you might try to do things yourself. You might try to like figure it out, and you might try to rush some things because you don't want to, you know, spend a lot of money with lawyers or things like that, and that might cause you to take some shortcuts. It's not that they necessarily would be deadly, but at some point you have to clean up, and you learn that cleaning that up, it's more expensive than doing right in the first place. So that's the only, it's kind of to circle back even with the bootstrapped, conversation. I'm a big fan of bootstrapped companies, even though, I'm not necessarily going that route anymore, but I know that there's a point that you start taking, decisions that are not really good for the long haul, or they'll be expensive to fix.
Yes. Well, and one of the pieces of advice, you know, that we frequently will give entrepreneurs is when you are bringing someone on board, especially in the beginning, making sure that there's a vesting schedule. So that way we've heard some horrible stories of companies where, you know, it was just two people, they gave them a ton of equity, they didn't last more than a year, it was bad, and then they had a ton of equity. So making sure that there's a vesting schedule when you are bringing someone on, that if they leave, let's say within the first year, obviously this is not legal, this is just things that we hear, right? You know, if you leave within the first year, then, you know, your equity has invested, but you're putting in parameters to protect both yourself and the company. So that way down the road, you're not stuck with potential original employees that are no longer there, but are still holding a pretty significant spot on your cap table.
Absolutely. And that's why it's so important to have a network, something like Pipeline, because you can learn from other folks that have gone through. And there's a lot of things that you do in the near term that might feel good, but you don't know the next phases that you have ahead of you and how that might come back to, you know, to haunt you later. So I think, you know, there's a lot of also there's a side of it that's even like, you know, what are market terms? What are things that people normally do? Because you'd hate to go out and try to fundraise and someone gets excited about your company and then you end up standing out for the wrong reasons, right? You stand out because you have this odd employment agreement, or maybe you don't have an employment agreement. Or you know, your equity distribution is not right or anything like this. So you want to be as boring as possible when it comes to those things. And that's not where you innovate or you know, you stand out. So.
Well, and that's where, so when it comes to starting a company, your legal team and getting a good, you know, business attorney, looking at your, you know, looking at everything is critical. But how about when you're exiting a company? What were some roles and some people and positions that were really valuable to you as you were looking to exit?
Yeah, absolutely. So besides the, you know, having a really good law firm behind the company and even personally, if needed, but then beyond that, there are some new roles that come into play. You know, the corporate lawyers that are part of a transaction, they might be the ones that work with you for, it's not the whole journey, but a good part of that. And so they'll be very familiar with the whole, you know, the legal docs and all this, and that helps too, because actually it speeds up things a lot versus when you do everything on your own or with someone else. And then, you know, if that final mile is with a different law firm, then they have to learn everything and it's more complicated. There are also other players that come in as well, things like, you know, investment bankers that can help you. It's less on the legal side, it's more on the transaction advice and whether or not the economical terms are market or reasonable. And, you know, they've seen transactions like this, like hundreds of them, like, you know, every year. You might see a few in your lifetime. So they definitely have, you know, much more experience and sound advice for you.
And so for you, when you were looking at, you know, finding an investment banker, like, I think that there is a theme, and I think this is one of the powerful pieces about Pipeline Entrepreneurs, is that there is a, there's a network of 150 members now who are all willing to, as you said earlier, kind of help you, you know, hopefully share their experiences and help you miss some mistakes along the way and everything else. But it takes a network to be able to, you know, have people to say, well, who did you use? And was this person valuable? And thankfully, you know, we're able to offer that to our members. But for people who are maybe not a part of Pipeline, what are some good resources? Just what are some tips or ideas to say when you're trying to find a good, you know, business attorney or business law firm or business broker, you know, how do you find that circle of trust?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially focused here in the Midwest, I'll do a shameless plug here to Bart Dillashaw.
Bart's awesome.
He's like highly engaged in the community, but he's really good too. A lot of people probably don't know, but he came from one of the top law firms in the Valley on the tech space, which is Wilson Sonsini. So we are very privileged to have someone here locally that has that level of talent and experience. And he's also, you know, very reasonable with his fees. So I think that's an easy resource to leverage. from a local perspective. I would say, you know, if you have the privilege to join Pipeline or something like this, things get much easier. But I would say people are still like, I know the Pipeline members, the experience once they help other folks through outside of the network and things like that. So there's a lot of mentorship going on. There's a lot of, you know, people helping each other regardless. And so I would encourage people to reach out to whoever are, you know, the Pipeline members in their area, kind of, you know, talk. Time is very precious, so, you know, you have to be a little patient there, but, you know, but with enough scheduling, everything can be done.
Yes, and for those of you listening, it is our week at Pipeline Entrepreneurs to take over the Startup Hustle podcast. So thank you so much to Startup Hustle for letting us take over this week and share our stories. If you are in Missouri, Nebraska, or Kansas, and you have a startup and would like to be a part of our fellowship, you can go to pipelineentrepreneurs.com, click on the application tab, and apply to be a member of our program. So we're super excited about that coming up this September. And we are talking with Leandro Castro, who is a serial entrepreneur. This is not the first time that he has built a successful company, and just asking questions and all the things that we hear from members, fellows, people in the community about how to start a successful company, how to exit a company. And since we're wrapping up today and we're talking about life after acquisition, when you were leaving, and I hear this a lot as well, was it hard to, were you still part of the transition team through the acquisition?
Yes, I was part of the team through the acquisition. And throughout the whole process, I'd say, you know, leaving, you know, thinking about leaving wasn't an easy thing. You know, you have a lot of mixed emotions. There's a side of you that's very excited about, you know, the success of the exit and, you know, that side of it, kind of, you know, crossing the finish line and all this. To an extent, that's one of the main goals of the whole journey. And, you know, it's like you're crossing the finish line of a marathon. So that all feels great. At the same time, too, you know, you build a lot of relationships, friends, you know, with, like, you know, customers, employees, all of that. And to an extent, you know, and there's a lot of your identity that's associated with that. So stepping out of that is definitely can create a certain level of anxiety. I was actually quite surprised with much more than I thought how easy it was to transition from that after it was all over, said and done. And I'm very happy with this new phase now, and super proud of what we accomplished before, and very excited for what's going on right now and the things that will come in the future. So,
well, we are super excited to watch you and Logica continue to grow, and we're just appreciative of your time today on the podcast. And so thank you for making the time. Thank you for being part of our Pipeline family. And thank you most of all to the Startup Hustle for welcoming Pipeline Entrepreneurs and taking over the Startup Hustle podcast this week. We have loved having the opportunity to spotlight some of our former fellows and look forward to welcoming next year's class to the Pipeline family. So be sure to check out our fellowship program by visiting us at pipelineentrepreneurs.com. And with that, Leandro, thank you so much for being here. Appreciate you. Appreciate Startup Hustle. And look forward to seeing what Logica does going forward.
Thank you so much. That was really fun. Bye.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time.